This is an Ant Podcast Management production.
Terms like a good Turk is a dirt Turk. It's provocative to begin with, and that doesn't help within the community at all.
This is for the world people. We are not living on the world. We are living on the North Cyprus.
I think that's the situation with many people when they think about Cyprus. All they know is that, oh, there's two sides in the island, a Greek side and a Turkish side, and they're constantly fighting, which is obviously not the case.
We are definitely not safe. We are definitely not free. And we definitely don't know what tomorrow is going to bring.
We might be refugees, the South Cyprus. Some of us might be refugees, but they live under occupation. The Turkish Cypriots live under the Turkish rule. We don't.
Hello and welcome to this What the Faux travel podcast documentary with Nick and Amy. Cyprus, a divided island.
We headed to Cyprus to find out what it means to be Cypriot and why the island is divided into two.
Within this documentary, we will be talking to the son of a Famagusta refugee, a national hockey player, and a mother who crosses the border daily for her children's education.
We'll also speak to a university professor who's been involved in the Cyprus peace talks, the organisation in charge of international football for an unrecognised country, and we take a day tour with Tour Plus to a ghost town. When most people think about Cyprus, especially our fellow Brits, they think about sun, sea, beaches, bars and restaurants. But there is much more to this holiday destination than meets the eye.
To help us begin to understand the situation here, we had a Skype conversation with James Kerr Lindsay, visiting professor at the London School of Economics. He is definitely the right guy for us to be talking to.
From 2016 through to 2017, I was actually working over at the Foreign Office in their Eastern Mediterranean team and was a member of the British delegation at the Cyprus settlement talks. You know, because of this colonial heritage, Britain actually has a specific role as what's called a guarantor power in Cyprus. And that's part of the 1960 constitution, which basically means that Britain, along with Greece and Turkey, is meant to protect the sovereignty, territorial integrity and independence of the Cypriot state, which means that you can't sign off on any final deal to solve Cyprus without including Britain, Greece and Turkey in the talks.
James goes on to explain where Cyprus is today and how it got there.
Essentially, you can boil it down that the Greeks have had some sort of cultural presence in Cyprus for thousands of years. And so for many Greeks, they sort of see the island as essentially Greek. And, you know, by no means all, but there is a strand. The Turks on the island are a much more recent community that really came at the end of the 1500s when the Ottoman Empire conquered the island. But now we're talking well over 400 years that you've had an established Turkish presence on the island. So it's not like these are sort of Johnny-come-lately sort of arrivals on Cyprus. You know, it's a very established, a very historical community in its own right. And essentially, so Cyprus was then under Ottoman rule until 1878, when it was handed to Britain during the time when the Ottoman Empire was in war with Russia. It was worried about Russian invasion of its eastern provinces. Britain was on the lookout for a seaport in the Mediterranean. The Suez Canal was being finished. You know, this was going to be the shortcut to India. Then World War I came along. Britain was at war with the Ottoman Empire, so it annexed the island. And then in the early 1920s, it formally declared Cyprus to be a colony. So it had actually been in charge of Cyprus for about 40 years before Cyprus officially had colonial status. By the end of the 1950s, though, you know, Britain was starting to decolonize. You know, we'd seen that Britain had already given up India. It was starting to give up other colonial territories. And the majority people of Cyprus, the Greek Cypriots, wanted desperately to fulfill a historic ambition, which is to unite with the Kingdom of Greece. But as I said, there was also a Turkish population on the island, and they sort of said, look, we don't want that. We don't want to be part of Greece. What we would like to be is part of Turkey. And so what you had on the one hand is Greek Cypriots saying, let's unite with Greece. Turkish Cypriots saying, well, let's partition the island. And the southern part will join with Greece. The northern part, where the Turks are mainly settled, will be part of Turkey. And eventually, the way that it was settled was that it was agreed that Cyprus would become an independent state. It wouldn't become part of Greece. It wouldn't be divided between Greece and Turkey. It would be independent. The two communities would share power. So you had the majority Greek Cypriots, who were 80% of the population, and then the Turkish Cypriots, who were 20% of the population. Quite a complex sort of power-sharing agreement was put in place. And that was sort of then capped, if you like, by Britain, Greece and Turkey. You know, they signed an agreement called the Treaty of Guarantee, which meant that they would protect this agreement, that they would protect Cyprus as an independent state, its sovereignty. The trouble was that this agreement, you know, for an independent state didn't last terribly long. It lasted about 3 years before the tensions between the two communities got out of hand. 1963, we started seeing fighting. The UN arrived in 1964, and as well as putting in the peacekeeping force, also tried to create some sort of peacemaking mission, but that didn't succeed. And then 10 years later, in quite complex circumstances, but Greece was under military rule, it had another attempt to try and annex Cyprus and make it part of Greece. Turkey responded, invaded, and the island was divided. And that essentially is trying to summarise the problem that we have now.
That's why Cyprus is a divided island. Now let's focus more on the physical divide between the two communities.
For many, many years, the two communities were really separated from each other. I mean, I can well remember the times when there was only one official crossing point, and it wasn't something that Greek and Turkish Cypriots could cross very easily. The Turkish Cypriots weren't allowing Greek Cypriots to cross over, and they were trying to prevent their own citizens, you know, from crossing equally. So there was very little contact between the two communities. I mean, I as a foreigner could cross over, but even then under quite restrictive rules. So the line wouldn't open till about 9 a.m. if I remember rightly, and you had to be back by 5 p.m. You couldn't stay overnight or anything like that. And then in 2003, the line was thrown open, and that was, I was living on the island at the time, and it was the most incredible experience. Suddenly, you know, nobody, it was all really confusing. It was just suddenly announced by the Turkish Cypriot leadership for reasons that aren't entirely clear. In the 15 or so years that the line has been open, there have been remarkably few incidents of hostility between the two communities, which gives people a lot of hope that, you know, if they could find a settlement, that, you know, you could actually have the two communities living, you know, pretty well with each other. And I certainly believe that. But we now have much more interaction, but it's not nearly as much as people might, you know, like to think. Opinion polls still show that, you know, the large majority of Greek Cypriots especially have either never crossed over or have only crossed the line once in 15 years. And I know many young Greek Cypriots, for example, you know, and the poll showed that I seem to remember it was about 80% of university-age Greek Cypriots had either crossed over once or never at all. Turkish Cypriots are much more willing to cross over, but for many Greek Cypriots, as a matter of principle, they will not cross until they can do so freely as part of a reunified island.
When the Turkish army invaded Cyprus, they declared the independent state of the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, a country only recognised by Turkey. The global community recognises the whole island as the Republic of Cyprus. Although effectively the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus is under military occupation, a free and democratic society exists.
When the UN holds talks, it treats both leaders equally. So, you know, Nikos Anastasiades, president of the Republic of Cyprus, is the Greek Cypriot leader. Mustafa Akıncı, the president of, and I'll use this horrible term, so-called Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, or president of Northern Cyprus, is the Turkish Cypriot leader. But if at the end of the meeting they walk out the room, and then Anastasiades says, look, oh, by the way, Secretary General, I just need to have a quick word with you about some other issue, like UN initiatives on controlling drug trafficking. Then the Secretary General will invite him back in as the President of Cyprus. But if Mustafa Akıncı then says, but I'd also like to talk to you about drug trafficking, the Secretary General would have to say, look, I'm really sorry, I can't talk to you.
At this point, we think it's time to meet Cypriots on both sides of the Green Line. We left our base in Paphos and said goodbye to the familiar home comforts such as fish and chip shops and British pubs. And we headed into the centre of the island to the capital city, Nicosia. This is at the heart of the issues because the divide literally cuts through the city, splitting it in two. It's the only divided capital city in the world.
We met up with Spiros Christofi, a local photographer whose mother is a refugee from Famagusta, an area which is now under Turkish military control. She was forced to flee to the south of the island when the Turkish army invaded in 1974. Spiros is pro-unification. He hopes that one day the island can unite as one.
The people who want unification, we are being called Turkish lovers on this side, and they are being called Greek lovers on this side. We are being told they raped you, they killed you, and they sent you out of your home, and now you want to get in bed with them. I feel there is a division between the Greek Cypriots. There are the Greek Cypriots who want a unification, a peaceful unification, and there are the Greek Cypriots who look for either a unification with their own terms or divide the island.
Being a so-called Greek Cypriot, we wanted to know how Spiros sees himself. How does he identify?
If you ask a Scotsman, what would he say? Am I Scottish or am I British? Scottish. Same as you ask in even another island in Greece. You ask the Cretans from Crete, where are they from? I'm Cretan. I feel Cypriot. I'm not defined by the term Greek Cypriot, only to the extent that I share the same religion, I share the same language, some ideologies, but we never had a huge connection, I don't think, with Greece. I want a united island, I want united people, I don't want hatred, I want people to be able to forgive. I don't want them to forget, it's no way of forgetting the past, but we need to forgive the wrongs that have been done from both sides. It's not one-sided, it's both-sided. And I think for the solution to be viable, we need to be able to work together as a more connected society, a more humanitarian society. And I think that will be the future of Cyprus, ideally, for me. Not politically, because politicians have their own gain, but there should be some progress in political terms as well. We need to break away from the guarantor powers. We currently have three: Greece, Turkey, and England. I had a conversation with, I'll say, a friend. He suggested that what's right for Cyprus is to break away from the Greek, to break away from the Turk, rely on one of the guarantor powers, which would be Britain, for a duration of time, until a more friendly environment starts growing, and then eventually break away from the third guarantor power. But we need to break away from at least the two that breeds nationalism.
Finally, does Spiros blame anyone for the current Cyprus situation?
The English always played a very smart game. They divided and ruled. I don't think that English are at fault 100% here, but they do share their piece.
We had one more person to speak to on this side of the island, Panos Panayotopoulos, a recent master's graduate who has also played field hockey for the Republic of Cyprus. He tells us that he's not happy about the divide, and we wanted to know how he identifies himself.
The technical term about it is Cypriot, because legally we're all recognised as Cypriots. If you've got a Cypriot passport, you're immediately a Cypriot. The term Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot only originated back in 1960 after the constitution was formed. It was put in place for other more sinister, let's say, political goals, namely by the British. Is that okay if I say
that? Yeah.
Namely by the British, in order to divide and conquer. So in that essence, obviously, I prefer being called a Cypriot. But then again, I do speak Greek. Most of the traditions I follow, let's say, are Greek. But if I really had to be really, really specific about it, I would say I'm a Cypriot who lives in the non-occupied area of Cyprus and speaks Greek. But it's a really, really long explanation, so sometimes you just, you know, paraphrase it into Greek Cypriot.
Can I ask, how do you feel about your fellow Cypriots in the north, the Turkish Cypriots? Yeah. Do you feel like brothers, cousins, or do you feel quite disconnected to them?
I think just because of how the situation is and just because I didn't grow up with them, there is a certain disconnect. But having said that, I also had some Turkish Cypriots in my school, which I did connect with. I also went to a bicommunal program with some of them. I've got friends who are actually Turkish Cypriots. So to me, they're just some friends, you know? I don't see them as, oh, some friends who are Turkish Cypriots or whatever. But the Turkish Cypriot community in general, I would say there is a certain disconnect, but it's not, how can I say, it's not a conscious disconnect, let's say. It's just a natural one that has evolved. I think the biggest gap is created because of the fear of the unknown that people have. So if you don't know what the other side is, or what a Greek Cypriot is, or what a Turkish Cypriot is, obviously you're going to be afraid of them. But if you do start it from a young age and you naturally grow up with them and know them as your classmate, as your bandmate, as your teammate, as your a guy you don't really like, or a girl you fancy, or whatever, then that creates a much more natural, you know, connection between them.
So the big question, what are his hopes for the future of his country? What does he think is the best case scenario?
So there's two schools of thought in that. There's people who, my age or a bit younger, who have basically grown up their entire lives living a very comfortable life in a divided island. So most of them will be like, what do I care, right? It's just, I don't care if it keeps going that way. I'm comfortable, I can raise my family, I'll be absolutely fine. I don't really feel that way. It feels bad to have, you know, your own country and your own nation divided. So I would obviously like for some sort of cohabitation to exist at some point. But in order for that to exist, it's what we were talking about earlier. It should occur more grassroots, more naturally, instead of being forced. Because when it's being forced, and we see that all around the world, when some sort of doctrine is forced, then you've got the opposite result rising all the time. And we can see that with the rise of right-wing populist parties all around Europe, all around America, everywhere. So yeah, I would say that it is possible. I would like to see it, but I would like to see it grow more naturally. Yes, it could be assisted by the government, or like by communication with the Turkish Cypriot community, but it should be done in a natural manner instead of like a forced manner. So basically what I would say is, like, starting from a really young age, facilitating people who want to take their children into education, either to the occupied area or to the non-occupied area, making it easy for them to do so, not putting barriers in their way, and also promoting different schools both in the north and the south of Cyprus. But I'm a firm believer that it should be done from the bare grassroots levels instead of starting from top to bottom, because that's not going to trickle down.
So a slow and natural integration is what Panos is hoping for, one that filters through the generations. That brings us perfectly onto our next guest, as we head into the military-controlled, unrecognised Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus.
After a quick and easy passport check, we were in. For our time on the north of the island, we were based in Kyrenia, or locally known as Gurna. Apart from some restricted access military signs, on the face of it, there was no evidence of a military occupation or a repressed community. It seemed like a nice, happy, normal town. We were there to meet Ezra Aygin, a journalist and peace activist who is doing something quite special. Every weekday, she crosses into the other side of the island, not just for work, but also to take her children to school.
Okay, so, yeah, school run begins. So how long does it take to get to school?
An hour.
Do you like going to school?
Yes.
Yeah?
School is boring.
School is boring?
Boring.
I don't believe you.
We were interested to know why she takes her children to school on the other half of the island.
Living in Cyprus and having grown up in half of Cyprus, I only had the chance to meet Greek Cypriots when I went to university. So I basically lived that part of my life without half of my country, without seeing half of my country or getting to know half of my country. And I didn't want this to be the case for my children. I wanted them to know that Cyprus is not just the north. It's not just the Turkish Cypriots. It is a big island, bigger than the half, at least. And that there are other Cypriots who speak a different language, but apart than that, that they're just the same as us.
Yeah.
When I went to university, surprisingly or not surprisingly, Greek Cypriots and Greeks were the people whom I got along with the most.
Okay.
The culture is so similar anyway, like the Turkish and Greek culture. Mm. And in Cyprus, the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots lived together for centuries. So imagine how much they have in common.
And so how does it benefit the children at school? Is it about education for you, or is it more about the social side?
It's both. They first of all learn Greek, and if they had gone to a school in the north, they would not have the chance to learn Greek.
Right, okay.
That's very important for me, because I think one of the biggest, you know, crimes, I would say, that we commit in this country is that we don't teach our children the language of their own country.
Yeah.
So they end up not being able to talk to each other, not being able to understand each other, not being able to, you know, take each other into account.
So, yeah.
So it just feeds the division. So yes, they are learning Greek, which is for me very important. But even more importantly, I would say they have Greek Cypriot friends.
Yeah.
You know, they, instead of being, so if they had gone to a school in the north, or it's the same for a child that goes to a school in the south, instead of being taught that the other is the enemy and is evil and it's, you know, someone to be wary of, they know that Greek Cypriot kids are just like they are. You know, they play with squishies and they love superheroes and they, you know, love cars and they have the same interests.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have given this protection to my children against all kinds of nationalism, racism, and extreme ideas and ideologies.
Now that we're in the Turkish part of Cyprus, we wanted to ask Ezra the same question as Spiros and Panos. How do you identify? Is your Turkish identity important to you?
I would just say I am a Cypriot, and unless I have to make further, you know, explanation, unless, you know, I am asked, I don't use the word Turkish. Mm-hmm. I am just Cypriot, and I think if everyone in Cyprus could start saying that, we would have overcome many of the problems.
Ezra's hopes for the future is unification, one country. She's already doing her bit by making sure her children interact with both communities. She told us why she wants a united Cyprus.
You know, all this, the borders, the crossing points, the divisions, the separation that today exists in this country is man-made. It's unnatural. Cyprus, you know, Turkish Cypriots, Greek Cypriots, and the other communities in Cyprus lived together for so many centuries, hundreds of years. And it was, you know, a political problem, or the problem that the political elites had, that created this division for the people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very evident when you start observing how Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots, after 40, 50 years of division now, when they come together and they start, you know, interacting and getting to know each other, the most common comment you would hear from them is like, oh, but we are the same.
Mm.
You know, so people, once they can get rid of the barriers that they have in their own heads and get in contact, once they do that, they realize that actually there isn't anything that separates us,
yeah,
instead of man-made barriers. But on the contrary, there is so much that unites us.
So what would you say to somebody who thinks the country shouldn't unite, and they think, what's the problem? We're safe here with the army. What would you say to somebody that thinks that?
To a Turkish Cypriot.
Yeah.
Well, we are not safe. first of all, because the situation in Cyprus right now is a completely de facto situation. We don't even have a ceasefire agreement in Cyprus. Right. There are ceasefire conditions, yes, there is no fighting, but there is no peace agreement or there is no ceasefire agreement. We have a 180 kilometer long green line running through the island where, you know, troops, enemy troops, are faced each other, you know, with heavy weaponry. Sometimes even small incidents can escalate into, you know, much bigger incidents. And if it wasn't for the United Nations peacekeeping forces here, there would have been a lot of, you know, more serious incidents. So this is not sustainable. How many more years are we going to have the UN peacekeeping forces here to, you know, make sure that things don't escalate into something bigger? We need a more concrete agreement that makes sure that this country, with its laws, its, you know, regulations, its practices, is safe. We should not need troops, foreign troops, or UN peacekeeping troops to make us feel safe.
Ezra also explains to us that in the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, they are cut off from the international community. There are no international flights, only flights to Turkey. Their postal service and phone lines are tied to Turkey, and the economy relies on Turkey. Relying so heavily on another country is not something that she's comfortable with. She is also not comfortable with the influx of Turkish citizens. Turkish people can travel to Northern Cyprus without a passport, no questions asked.
So what happens is that, yes, demographically you become a minority, but this also affects your culture and the way you live, because you start becoming more and more of a minority in a community, and another culture becomes dominant. So we are seeing, especially in the recent years, we are seeing a much more conservative and religious culture that is taking, you know, dominance in the northern part of the island, whereas Turkish Cypriots are not religious at all. They have a very laid-back lifestyle, free, you know, lifestyle. We are seeing more and more ways of conservatives, you know, living or lifestyles.
Sometimes Ezra experiences some unwillingness from other parents at the school when first engaging in conversation due to her Turkish Cypriot roots. But this quickly dissipates. We wondered if driving a car with a Turkish Cypriot registration plate around Greek Cyprus makes her some sort of a target.
Very rarely. I mean, I have been crossing to the south since 2003 almost every day.
Wow.
So yeah, 15 years. And only once or twice I have, you know, come up with someone who showed that they were not happy to be seeing a Turkish Cypriot car. You know, in one particular case, it was more than not just being happy, but like there was some car chase involved. But, you know, it's negligible. I know that there are people with extreme views, with hatred on both sides of the island, and with the education system and with the, you know, the style of the mainstream media, this is expectable. It's not surprising.
Finally, we wanted to know what Ezra thought of nationalists who believe that Cyprus is a Greek or Turkish island only.
It's stupid. It's what brought hell to Europe, actually, decades ago. Mm. You know, the world wars. It was all, you know, the belief that one nation is greater than the other, and that the other nations do not belong there, and that they cannot live together, and that they shouldn't have any other rights. These kinds of ideologies have led to catastrophes in so many different places. so many times.
Yeah.
So I really cannot accept the fact that in Cyprus we can still, not we, but the government can still tolerate this kind of nationalism and this kind of extreme ideologies when we have seen time and again that they lead to destruction of not only the community or the nationality that they are against, but themselves too.
Yeah.
So I think I very, very strictly think, very strongly think that there should be a zero tolerance, you know, policy and laws against this kind of nationalism and this kind of extreme ideologies.
From two people who are very proud to be from the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus. But first, we couldn't resist a trip to the famous ghost city of Famagusta. Remember that we spoke to Spiros earlier? This is the same place that his mother was forced to flee when the Turkish army invaded.
Today we are exploring Famagusta together. My name is Resmiye. Today I'm your guide. But you can call me Resi.
We joined Tour Plus, a local tour company based in Kyrenia, or Gurna. Our tour guide, Resmir, goes on to explain Varosha, the part of Famagusta, which is now a ghost town.
Varosha was the city centre of the Famagusta at the beginning. After 1974, when the Turkish army came to Cyprus, they started to bomb Varosha. Why? Because there were one hotel named Salimina Hotel, which was the oldest hotel in Cyprus. And there was one anti-aircraft on the top of this hotel, and they started to shoot the planes of the Turkish army. So that's why the Turkish army bombed that place. And the place was abandoned in one night, but no one's injured.
Varosha is still abandoned today because it is part of the no man's land which divides the island. It's been said that if Cyprus ever finds a solution, then the city will be reopened.
All the hotel owners told their guests who's lived in the hotels, no worries, you will come back in the morning. So they all leave their stuff, the letters and the clothes of those guests.
Wow, now we can go back. And what happens if you try to go back to the city?
They will arrest you.
Now, we will finish with a story that piqued my interest, being a big football fan. In 2018, I heard on the radio that there was a football tournament in London run by CONIFA, and it was for all unrecognised nations in the world, countries that can't participate in FIFA tournaments. FIFA being the organisation who run world football. In this CONIFA tournament in London, Northern Cyprus actually got to the final, but lost on penalties to Karpatalia, a Hungarian minority in western Ukraine. I had to speak to someone in Turkish Cypriot football about this.
My name is Orçun Kamalı. I am the deputy president of Cyprus Turkish Football Association, and also I am the executive member of the CONIFA.
My name is Kenan Osan, and I play in North Cyprus Football League in Doğan Türk Birliği.
Nick spoke to Orçun about the difficulties he faces trying to get his boys to just play football.
So we are working for the football in the north part of the Cyprus and organizing everything. We're trying to give the best to our players, our women and men football. You know, in the philosophy of the football that basically if you don't compete, you don't improve. And we don't have the chance to play international football because of the legal issue of the FIFA regulations. Because they're saying that if you are not a member, you can't play the other countries. That's why we have to follow the CONIFA organization, that we joined the CONIFA organization, that we get the chance last 3 years, we form our national team, and our players have the chance to play the other players on the world. So, yes, we are playing football, but the world is not playing with us. FIFA is working for the football. So they have to think about the football for the countries that because of the political issue they are suffering. We have the kids that they're asking to us why we can't play the football against these teams out of Cyprus. So it's a shame for us to tell the 10 years old or 9 years old boy or girls that you can't play because of the political issue. This is not nice for the global world that is coming for the future. So the FIFA has to find a chance to give the equality chance to every boys and women who are playing football on the world.
Cyprus does have an international football team, but it's dominated with Greek Cypriots. With this in mind, I asked Keenan why it was important for him to represent the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus.
Tabii ki 3 yıldır böyle güzel bir
Kenan is saying that his last 3 years that he's playing representing the country in the CONIFA organizations, he's proud of this.
Kendimi çok gururlu hissettim ve ülke adına bir şey yapacağımı hissettim.
He feel that it's a proud of him to do this kinds of participation, this organization to represent the country.
What do all the players think? Is it more important to have your Cypriot identity or Turkish identity or a mix?
You have both. We can't separate them.
Yeah, it's both.
Yeah, like you are British, but you are Scottish, you are Irish, or you are English. This is the like. We are Cypriot, but we are Turkish, or we are Greek, or Maronic. That is the ethnic people that taking places in the Cyprus. We are Cypriot, okay, but we are Turkish Cypriot. We have Greek Cypriot.
Yeah.
We have Maronic Cypriot. So this is our country. This is our home.
What do you both hope for the future of your national football team?
Bize rast gelmezse eğer bizim çocuklarımıza ya da çocuklarımıza FIFA'ya katılmasını en büyük temennimiz.
He is wishing to join the FIFA and he is thinking if he is while he is playing football to be joined to FIFA, but if not maybe the next generation to be in the FIFA.
Bunları başarabilmek için elimizden geleni yapmaya çalışacağız.
So we are going to try to do it.
FIFA's mission, their statement, their slogan. Do you know what it is?
And, yeah, and equality for everyone.
Okay.
Equality.
And do you think they're doing that?
Yeah, this is for the world people. We are not living on the world. We are living on the North Cyprus.
Finally, I had one more very important question for Keenan.
What's the most popular football that you watch on television? Is it Turkish football or English? Spanish?
English.
The Premier League?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah? Who's your team?
Arsenal.
Arsenal?
Yeah.
Cut the interview.
It's been a fascinating journey through Cyprus, a little island with a big history, different ethnic groups and a lot of different opinions. We don't know what the future holds for Cyprus. Hopefully it's a peaceful future, but what we do know is that the island is far more than just a holiday destination, and we hope that if you ever go there, that you'll bear this in mind.